Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI thrown through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and this is my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 9, Grissom vs. the Volcano. Original air date, December 11, 2003. Director Richard J. Lewis. Writers Anthony E. Zeiker, Carol Mendelson, and Josh Berman. And we begin, as we begin many of episodes, with shots of the Vegas Strip before we head over to the Orpheus. Well, the Orpheus part doesn't happen a lot, but shots of the Vegas Strip happen a lot. So, Nick, yep. What is our Vegas score for today's episode?
We have a pretty good Vegas score. I almost felt like I should have given it more. It feels very Vegas-y. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We do have many, many scenes, and I awarded a few bonus points. So we end up at 40 for Vegas score, which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Although we were at 39 last episode, and if you asked me to compare the Vegas-iness of these two episodes, This episode wins by a landslide.
For sure.
I only gave it like 3 points bonus because they spend so much time in a casino. And I gave it one extra bonus point for the car parking, the car rental scene where you can see the strip in the background and a fake CGI airplane taking off from the Las Vegas airport. But there are like 8 scenes in total or like throughout the episode. So there's a lot of like little short ones.
Yeah.
I even gave them the dentist office one, which...
Oh, okay.
I think there's a weird, like, the shortest ever, like, 1.5, 2 second shot of downtown Vegas when they're, like, cutting between scenes.
Yeah.
They're on. So I also want to say I spent a significant amount of time reading the Wikipedia page for Joe versus the Volcano, which is the Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan movie that isn't the famous Tom Hanks Meg Ryan romantic comedy.
Never heard of this movie.
Where Tom Hanks plays a guy who's dying and is basically agrees to take a bunch of money to allow himself to be thrown into a volcano as a sacrifice so that some rich dude can mine minerals from this tribe's land. And that's the one thing they want. It's very farcical. I read the whole plot because I thought somehow it would have a correlation to this episode.
It does not, spoiler alert.
I was like, what is that? That title is like so formulaic that I was like, oh, this is a reference to something. And I had heard like the name of the movie Joe vs. the Volcano before. And so I kind of figured it was referring to that. I thought the plot would somehow mirror the plot from that movie. It does not.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
And there's like maybe some weird parallels you could try to draw between the episode and the movie. A real funny thing in this movie, I found out that Meg Ryan plays 3 different characters in the movie, each with a different color hair. Okay. 2 of which are supposed to be related, 1 of which is not. But I will say the funniest part of the whole plot was at the end of the movie, allegedly they both throw, spoiler alert, they both apparently throw themselves into this volcano together because they've fallen in love.
Wow.
But the volcano happens to erupt at that exact moment and blows them back out to sea, where the raft that they had made it to the island on after their ship sank, they happen to land on it. And then, you know, and then so Joe doesn't. Oh, and it turns out he was never really dying. The rich guy paid a fake doctor to tell him he was dying so that he would really throw himself in a volcano. So I kind of want to go watch this movie. I thought about trying to watch it. I never really had the time.
We could decide if we want to do it as a Patreon extra.
Sure. I was like, you should do like a Riff Tracks version of Joe versus the Volcano. It'd be really good. I will say, I'm going to talk about another movie later where I'll spot the guest stars from.
Okay.
I think the problem is I more want to go watch that movie again than I want to watch Joe versus the Volcano.
Fair. So we're not at a volcano. We're at the Orpheus, and we have a valet going to a car, and we also see the sheriff exiting the Orpheus. The valet approaches this man in a Camaro and, you know, asking him about his bags, and he goes to the trunk of the vehicle and big old explosion.
Just as he opens the trunk,
as he opens the trunk, it goes boom, boom. Yeah.
They don't really dwell, like, I feel like as an audience member you're led to believe that maybe the trunk set the bomb off, but they like never really talk about that from a CSI standpoint during the episode. I wonder if there wasn't just a witness that said that it happened just as he opened the trunk.
Yeah.
I checked the trunk, but there doesn't appear to be any mechanism, you know, one of those 5 second scenes got cut out.
So we then have firefighters on scene. Shortly after that, Grissom and Catherine arrive. Instead of Jim Brass debriefing them, the sheriff debriefs them because he was there and witnessed the entire thing. As they're talking, gunfire erupts, so they all go for cover. Except for the sheriff, who just stands there holding his gun up, kind of befuddled, just looking around. And I was like, what? How is this going to be helpful?
Well, he's going to shoot the shooter. He doesn't know why the gun.
But he's like, not going for cover, like just making himself a target. We go to credits. We return to Grissom, Catherine, and Sheriff at the car. The shots were, in fact, from the trunk. There was bullets in the trunk of the car, and the explosion ignited them, and they shot off. So it was not a person doing the shooting. It was a byproduct of the explosion. David is there. We have a quick little cameo from David. He's looking for the feet. Grissom has found them. They're still in the car. Yeah. So David is going to go and collect the feet. Catherine is, you know, processing another part of the scene. Nick arrives. Catherine found what she thinks is a gun belonging to the driver of the vehicle. And then Nick is going to go off to separate out the bomb components to try to like isolate and pick them out.
Nick like walks into the crime scene. Like he's like standing among the debris field. He like parked his car basically in the middle of the crime scene. And he's just like apologizing for like some traffic.
Like,
and
I'm thinking, oh, there was some traffic.
Thinking, how about you just get out of the crime scene, Nick?
Yeah. No. Who cares about contamination at this point? It was an explosion.
She's like still laying down markers on evidence. Yeah. And you just probably kicked a piece of bomb.
Probably. We have a short scene with Grissom and the sheriff, and this is a theme throughout the episode, wants answers. ASAP. He wants to know exactly what's going on. He wants to know the answers to everything. And he's about to go talk to the press, and he's kind of looking at Grissom like, hey, what are you thinking? You know, like, what should I... Essentially kind of being like, what should I say as I go over to the press? And Grissom is like, not thinking, just looking.
Yeah.
And I will say, the sheriff has a fun quip, and he's like, man, I wish I could use that one, and like walks away. That was actually like, I was like, okay, you guys have like a little bit of a...
They have a good relationship. Yeah. Kristen is like, oh, I'm so glad you're okay, but not in a weird, sarcastic way.
Yeah, in a legitimately, I'm glad you did not get exploded. We then leave storyline A. We go to storyline B with Warwick, Sarah, and an officer in a suite. We learn that the victim here is Amelia Rubens. She is 25 years old. She is Mile Rubens' wife. We'll learn very soon that this is a singer. And Amelia is laying like face down in a hot tub. Sarah pulls a wine glass from the hot tub, and we learn that
the hot tub is on.
It's on. And then it magically shuts off.
It happens to shut off. She's like, oh, the timer's still on. And then it shuts off. And all I can think is somebody came into this room, found this woman face down in an operating hot tub, and said, oh, she must be dead. I better not pull her out and perform CPR.
No life-saving attempts were made.
No one called the paramedics.
Nope.
We just assume she's dead as a doornail.
Yep.
From step one, and we left her in this look. I mean, it makes a certain presentation for the scene, but I was like, wait, why didn't anyone try to save her?
It's like, yeah, because it's not like we at this point have like a firm timeline of the last time someone saw her alive. So it's like maybe she was only like in the water for like 2 minutes, like when someone found her. Like,
and like a lot of times it'll be like, oh, we found a body in the pool, it's been shot, there's like blood everywhere, it's pretty obvious this person is dead, we're not gonna try to pull them out.
She looks perfect,
but this woman, if you came in, you would have no idea if she was in the water for 1 minute or 10 minutes. With the hot tub running, you'd probably think it's even shorter. And to think that was 40 minutes ago. They said that they found her like took them like a half an hour to get here.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was the one time the whole episode I was like, wait, what? Why did they just leave her there for 40 minutes?
They do. We learn that at this time, her husband, Miles, is still on stage. So we then have scenes that are interjecting where we see Miles on stage performing and then Sarah and Warwick collecting evidence. We then have Doc Robbins on scene. He's out of the lab again. He's still in his he's in his uniform, but he's out of the lab. And this is where we learn that Amelia has been dead less than an hour. And then Warwick is like, oh my gosh, I'm just putting it together. Do you know what like his Miles' biggest hit is? Amelia.
Yes.
Okay. So
I like his like, I'm just putting it together.
Just putting it together now. And we then have Warwick and Sarah side stage with the manager. And this is my first.
Okay, good.
The guest star. So this is Don Stark. He plays Sam Hopkins in this episode, Miles' manager. I know him 100% as Bob from That 70s Show.
Yes, okay, yeah, yeah. Like, me too. Ditto.
100% Bob from That 70s Show. And That 90s
He
show.
Even has like a fro.
Well, I wonder if it's like... yeah, I mean, this would have been the time that he was filming, because it was... That 70s Show was 1998 to 2006.
So he was already in that show, and he's just randomly in an episode of CSI. Like, That 70s Show had been on for years, and then he was randomly in one episode of this CSI show.
He's in 200 episodes of That 70s Show.
Yeah, he's Donna's dad. He's in like almost every episode.
Yeah, so that's where I know him from. And the manager, Sam Hopkins, is like, I should be the one to give them news. Like, I've been his manager, you know, since like 97, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm, you know. And so they're all now standing like off stage. The manager can't get it out, though. He's just like, no, your mom's fine, but. And then Sarah just steps in. Yeah. Sarah's like, look, sorry to have to be the one to tell you, your wife's dead.
It's I feel like it's the kind of thing, it's not an easy part of the job.
I can't imagine.
Some of the most important people in their life are no longer with them.
So upon hearing this news, he says, you know, no encore tonight. You know, he's not going to go back out there and sing another song. He's gonna end the show. We then have Grissom with the car back at HQ. Greg Sanders enters. He wants to help out, so he goes underneath the car, and as they're kind of examining, Grissom realizes that the digital clock was the switch, not the trunk, as like the first scenes kind of led us to believe it was in fact the digital clock. We then have a nice little montage of Nick reconstructing the bomb, starting to put the bomb back together.
I'm amazed at how well he's able to reconstruct this bomb.
I am not that good at puzzles. I would.
It's like first pass. He's just like, bomb. You don't even know what the bomb is made of yet.
Nope. We find out in this scene, though, that because Nick is talking to the sheriff and Grissom, that it was a pipe bomb. And they really focus on the fact that there is nothing unusual about this bomb.
Yes.
Like, this is just like run of the mill.
Super generic.
No signature. Nothing unusual about it. We then have Doc Robbins talking to Warwick and Sarah. Amelia did not drown. In fact, she died of cardiac arrest, but her heart was in perfect condition. So weird.
And just sitting out in this little.
Yeah, and just sitting out. He's like, do you want to look at it? Do you want to. Just in case you don't believe me, just in case I am lying to you about the condition of her heart, I have it right here.
You're not a doctor, so you wouldn't know.
But you can come take a look if that's going to like make you feel better about the situation. We then have Catherine with Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby's back.
Bobby's back. I was like, it's Bobby.
Bobby's back. I don't think we ever see the other gun guy ever again.
No, because I think he was only in like 2 or 3 episodes, if I'm remembering from his IMDb. And we learn that the ammo that was in the car was pre-fragmented ammo, which essentially means that the driver is probably a federal air marshal. Like, that's like the most common use case for this type of ammo.
I was reminding myself that like this is not that far past 9/11 and Patriot Act. There were like legitimately air marshals and like 20% of the flights in the US. And they were just flying around all the time.
Yeah.
And they were armed with guns, and these were the type of bullets that they used.
Yep. So we then have Sarah and Warwick. They are talking about they printed the dial on the hot tub, and the print came back to the manager, Sam, which they find suspicious. Greg Sanders enters, and we learn that the victim was poisoned with like an industrial solvent. So that's why she went into cardiac arrest, because she somehow got hydrochloric acid in her system.
Yeah, they never really explain the mechanism. It's just like, this was in her system, poisoned her. It's like, because you have a heart attack, and later on, there's like recreation and the timing at which how quickly this thing appears to have caused a heart attack kind of blew me away.
So we then have Sam on stage. He's yelling at Jim about the lighting and work, and Sarah go over to talk to him. He admits to being in the room. He's just like, look, I wear a lot of hats. Anything Miles need, anything to keep Amelia happy, like, I'm going to do it. And they're like, well, don't, you know, you're trying to say that it's not suspicious that you're, you know, you were alone with her as she's like naked or partially naked in the hot tub. And he, I did enjoy this line. He goes, do I look like a threat?
Yeah.
Like me?
Am I the guy that you
Am think? I the guy that's going to like steal her away from him? Really? So then we have Jim Brass at a car rental location, and we learn that the person driving the Camaro was, in fact, an air marshal, and he specifically asked for the Camaro because he wanted a compact. They didn't have any compact. The person at the car rental place was going to put him in another car for no additional fee, and he's like, no. He's like, I'll take the Camaro. So they put him in the Camaro. So Jim Brass and Grissom are then on the lot talking, and this is where Grissom realizes that the bomb must have already been in the car before he drove off the lot. Like, there wasn't enough time between when he picked up the Camaro and got to the Orpheus. There wasn't enough time in there for someone to like wire a pipe bomb into the car.
For him, like, for instance, someone else.
Yeah.
Someone else would do it during the exchange, which was like minutes.
Yes. It was like 9 minutes. It was on the lot or something like that. And so they're like, well, we should probably look to see who rented it before, which brings us to Jim Brass and a few officers as they enter an apartment. Once it's cleared, Grissom and Catherine go inside. They're, you know, searching for evidence. Catherine finds an indent on a magazine. Grissom finds a used Band-Aid. The indent ends up being essentially the indent of a note for a 4 p.m. doctor's appointment. And so this brings us to Jim Brass and Catherine with Mr. Dunbar.
By the way, this was the dentist appointment.
Okay.
Yeah. They show this like office building, like right off of the strip. And I'm like, yeah, it counts.
You're like, it's fine.
Write it down.
And so they're trying to find out at first, does he have something against the car rental place? And he's like, no, yes. I love it there. I'm a premier card member. Like, why would I, like, I'm not going to do anything. He gets double points. Like, what are you talking about? And then as they're continuing this conversation and he's realizing the gravity of the situation, he does ask for an attorney. So good on you, Mr. Dunbar. Catherine produces a warrant, though, for his clothes and is like, strip, we have this warrant. We then go to Nick in the lab. He's like solidifying a liquid for analysis and he's like mixing something into it. It turns blue. Come to find out, that means it's rocket fuel.
Yep.
I don't know how that works, but
I think it was the very specific test they were doing I think with the sheriff scene with Grissom and him, there was talk about, you know, check for these and these types of explosives, organic and inorganic tests or something.
Yeah. So then, as they're talking and they're, so we're realizing that it's rocket fuel and gasoline. So again, it's like not hard to come by chemicals. Right, yeah. Like you could get these in a variety of places.
It also wasn't clear to me if there was gasoline in the pipe bomb or if they were relying on the gasoline.
I think it was in the pipe bomb.
Because you need the pressure to happen inside of the pipe.
Yeah, I think he said it was inside.
Yeah.
The sheriff is in the hallway, so he interjects himself into this conversation. And this is where Grissom lets him know that Mr. Watson, the air marshal, might have just been in the wrong place, wrong time. Like he wasn't actually the target in this instance.
If he was in a slightly less of a rush.
Or
just wanted to take a different car.
Yeah, he would have been all right. And Nick in the scene could also explain why they're not going to be able to determine when the bomb was supposed to go off. Like it was on a timer, but there was a short in the wire, which means it was like an unpredictable time.
Yeah.
So they can't tell when it was supposed to go off, but when it went off was probably not the time that it was intended.
It likely went off early.
Yeah. No, late.
Oh, I assumed it was early because I assumed that the short caused it to go off out of time, but I really don't know.
Yeah.
Because later on they tell you 8:30 in the morning but they don't tell you what day. So I don't know if it was supposed to be the next day.
It was supposed to be when he was driving the car.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
So it went off late.
So it should have gone off before. Well, yeah, there's also the whole, when we get to the rest of the plot line, we can talk about it.
Okay.
But I feel like there's also the realization of maybe not always having all the information.
Yeah. Okay. So, we'll get there. So then Dwork answers Greg Sanders' page, and we learn that the hydrofluoric acid was in the wine. So that's how she was poisoned, was that it was in her wine, and then she consumed the wine. So we then have Dwork and Sarah in the kitchen with a waiter.
This waiter is my spot the guest star for this episode, who is Louis Lombardi, who I believe only ever gets credited as waiter.
Yes, he's waiter. That's what it is in his IMDb.
He's in a bunch of things, but he will forever be this character from a movie called Suicide Kings. And we talk about this every once in a while, how like those early DVDs when you only own like five movies and you watch them over and over. I have probably watched Suicide Kings 20, 30 times. I love that movie. I think it's hilarious. There's a bunch of people in that movie. He plays his character Mickey, who is the partner, who's like Dennis Leary's partner. Okay. There are a couple like mob guys. Their mob boss in that movie is played by Christopher Walken. And he's like an old retired mob boss. And they're like, they just do stuff for him. They spend most of the movie looking for him. But I definitely quote some lines from like the scene between him and Dennis Leary. But the short of that is that Dennis Leary buys like $1,500 stingray boots. And he refers to them as fish boots. And I was like, it's the fish boots guy. And yeah, there's like a scene where they get stopped by like a window washer. I actually believe this movie might take place in Las Vegas. Or Southern California. It might just be in Southern California.
Okay.
There is like some Vegas references in this movie. There's some casino scenes in this movie. They are, anyways, he like gives us this homeless person who is like trying to like wash windows for tips, you know, at the intersection thing, like Dennis Leary's character like chases him off. He gives him like $500 to just get lost, get cleaned up. I don't want to ever see you here again. And then the guy's like, oh yeah, between the busket, which is he like the homeless guy keeps calling the bucket the busket. And he's like, give me the busket, put the rag in the busket, go get yourself cleaned up. I don't ever want to see you on the street again. And the line is like, oh, between the busket and the fish boots, you're at $2,000. I just love that line. There's something just very silly about it. So yeah, I quote that line a lot. So yeah, and he's in 24, which I've seen a bunch of episodes of. He's in The Sopranos.
And that's where I've not watched The Sopranos, but I've seen enough like clips of it online that I think that's where I recognize him.
He plays like an FBI informant. He's in like half of a season or bunch of episodes from a couple of seasons.
Yeah,
not a huge character, but definitely a character. But he's also in a bunch of other random things. But I always remember him as. Best part is I didn't even know this character's name. But yeah, now I really want to go watch The Suicide Kings again, which was like one of the last DVDs I held on to before I threw away.
Yeah, the last before of you were like, DVDs. All right, I gotta get rid of these.
Well, I don't have a DVD player anywhere in the house.
Yeah,
so
yeah. No, that's fair.
I can't watch it. Even my computer nowadays doesn't have a DVD drive anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of funny. But yeah, no, I love that. And he's, he's a pretty small part, but he's only credited as waiter, despite he's in like three, he's in this very long protracted scene in a couple of flashbacks. And I'm trying to think, he might be in one other scene later on, but yeah, he doesn't get a name. He's only waiter.
He's just waiter. And so they're talking to the waiter and he's explaining that like, yes, he, you know, brought the wine up to Amelia, but Miles showed him the door that night. And he's also explaining that, you know, Amelia was lonely. Like she would call down for something to be brought up to the room like three or four times a night. And he never saw them fight, but he heard them fight. So, but he's like, hey, look, I'm not going to like bite the hand that feeds me. It is what it is. So we go back to storyline A. Catherine gets a printout regarding Mr. Dunbar's clothing. And look at that. There's rocket fuel on his shirt. So they're talking to him about this. And he's like, oh, yeah, I helped my son make a volcano. So it must, you know, I must have spilled some of it on my shirt. And Catherine's kind of like talking about the apartment, like, wait, you have a family? Like what? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm with my family on the weekend. And then I like travel during the week for work. And then I have the apartment for additional space. And she's like,
yeah,
what?
I want to talk about one thing. They never tell you what this guy actually really does.
No.
Like, or confirm it.
No. Nope.
But the amount of money it would take to pay for this apartment, to pay for everything else that he is financially responsible for, theoretically, like, it's like, he just doesn't seem that bright.
No, he does not.
And I was like, the most unbelievable part of the storyline is that this guy has made it this far.
Yep. And so this brings, so then they want to talk. They want to know where his house is. They're like, okay, we have the address for your apartment. We need to know where your actual house is. So Catherine and Grissom go to a house and they meet Mrs. Dunbar. And this like, is
don't
my.
Don't screw it up with my wife.
This is my spot guest star is Mrs. Dunbar. So this is Susan Diol, and I know her as Dr. Dinara Pell from Star Trek Voyager.
Ah.
She's only in two episodes, but she's like a fairly critical, like she's an impactful character in the episodes of Star Trek Voyager that she's in. And so, yeah. And then come to find out, she's also in a later episode of CSI. So oh, really? I might also recognize her from seeing her in a later season of CSI.
Occasionally you see people and they're in like two episodes of CSI. And I'm like, I don't think I'll remember, you know, Mrs. Dunbar.
Yeah, by the time.
I see her 4 years from now.
Oh, it's longer than that. She's back in it in 2011.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we get through a couple seasons here. You know.
Yeah, that's true. And so Grissom and Catherine enter the house. There is a volcano on the table, as Mr. Dunbar said, and look at that, like all the chemicals that were needed for the pipe bomb are near this volcano. And this prompts a science fair competition, and Catherine's like, I built a volcano, I should have won. The other person won because of ants. And then she's like, oh no, that's you. And Grissom's like, bugs always
win. It's not actually him though.
No, it's not actually him. No,
it's just another person like him.
Yeah, like him. And so then we have Catherine talking to Mrs. Dunbar, and she's asking her about like him helping to build the volcano, and she's like, Roger, no, like he's completely helpless, like I helped our son make the volcano, like he doesn't know how to do like anything with his hands. And this is where we learn that she thinks he works for the State Department and that's why he's always traveling. And then she admits, as they continue talking, that one drunken evening Roger admitted to her that he is CIA.
Do you think that that's true?
I think he said that to her.
Yeah.
I don't think that he actually is CIA.
Yeah, I don't.
No.
That's like the great mystery of this episode for me is like, what the heck does this guy actually
do? What does he do for work? I want to know.
I just have no idea.
So then we're back at HQ. Nick enters the room. Grissom is there with the volcano, and they compare the tool marks on the pipe bomb to the tool marks on components of the volcano. They do not match. Not the same tool. We then have Catherine. She is with Ronnie. Ronnie's back too. Our paper guy is back. Our ballistics guy is back.
I don't know if Ronnie's in that many more episodes.
I don't think he has been before. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a big reunion episode.
With our lab support here. So
I wonder, it's not far enough. We're getting close, but I think it would have to be the end of this season, maybe the next season, to get to like episode 100. I think we're well past episode 50.
Yeah, we're past episode 50.
So yeah, maybe it was like, I wonder if they brought people back for like episode 100 or something.
Could be.
I don't think it's far enough along.
Yeah.
Because it was only like 60, like maybe episode 75. Yeah, that might be where
possibly.
We're at.
Yeah. And so we learn in this exchange that in some of the documents he had, some he was Roger A, some he was Roger B. We also realize that there's three different meters for some of his utility bills.
Also, and Roger A, Roger B, great way to keep them
separate. So good way to keep them separate. Well, Greg Sanders enters. The DNA on the Band-Aid that Grissom collected is female, and it has 7 alleles in common with Mr. Right. Dunbar. And so Nick is going to have a science with Nick.
I figured this out. It was really not science with Nick, because Nick didn't know the science. He had to look it up, because we'd had this in another episode.
Yeah, and you were like, this doesn't make sense.
Allele is just like any group of genes. So you have like theoretically hundreds of thousands, millions of alleles. I don't know what the number is. So like to be like, oh, you have you probably have 7 alleles in common with every single person you've ever met. In fact, you probably have many, many more. It turns out what he's actually talking about is the CODIS database is based on 15 snippets of DNA. And so in that they are standardized, They're from these segments of DNA that don't really do anything that would be like descriptive. So they don't like expose any information about a suspect.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you don't have to worry about the privacy of holding on to it or looking it up or anyone having a prejudice for it, you know, but they have these like repetitions. They're easy to find and snip and compare. And so this was the standard that they would use because early DNA processing, early databases, they couldn't do the kind of stuff we could do today. And it's like, makes like a 1 in 10 million, like 1 in 10 million chance to like randomly match with somebody. So it's pretty good, especially if you're, if you have some other connection, that if you get a DNA match to find what you're looking for. So because there's like 15 of them, having 7 is about half.
Yeah,
so that makes you a child, a brother, a sister, you know, somewhere in that immediate familial connection, which would mean like if they ever said like 3 or 4, then it would be like a grandson or a cousin or a great or a grandparent or something.
Yeah.
It would be that second sort of separation. Okay. Yeah. So that's why they keep saying 7 alleles. They're checking certain alleles that are part of the standard CODIS set.
Okay.
And so having 7 to 15 is basically half.
Yeah. And in so having this information, they deduce that it must be a daughter. And Catherine's like, wait a second. Like, he has a son. I don't. And this is where she's like, wait a moment. He's not a double agent. He's living a double life.
Double life.
Bah, bah, bah. So, allegedly. Well, confirmed pretty soon after when Catherine and Grissom arrive at a different house and they approach a blonde woman. And she's like, oh my gosh, do you have news about my husband? He was supposed to come home on Monday. And she seems pretty chill about this. I feel like there's so many situations in this episode where people should be more upset than they are. And they're just kind of like,
the only counterpart of that is living a double life. You've probably done this once or twice before.
This is true. This is a good point. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think about that. That's very true. So they're like, oh, is this your husband? And she's like, yep. And so this is.
I want to know why he chose one family over the other when he had to give them a real address. I think it's because maybe that's where he had the car and the connection to the car rental from.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, you know, His the person who's responsible would have gotten away with it probably if the shoe was on the other foot.
Yep. But Grissom opens the trash during this conversation and sees some familiar chemicals. So he asks if the woman has a daughter, and she does confirm. So he's like, is she like participating in a science fair? So then we're with Catherine Grissom and the mom and the daughter Amy in the garage, and they need to take her volcano. She's not happy about this, but she acquiesces eventually. And we learn in the scene that Roger helped Amy to build it, which isn't that a bit strange when Mrs. Dunbar number one said that he was useless and wouldn't be able to help build a volcano.
Yeah.
So we again leave storyline A behind for a bit. We're with Warwick and Sarah. They're going through the suite, and Warwick finds a cleaner in the suite that has hydrochloric acid in it. So they're thinking that they found what was used to poison the wine. So then Warwick, Sarah, and an officer are with Miles. He waives the right to an attorney. Don't do this.
Don't ever waive your right to an attorney.
Do not ever waive, especially when you have the money for a good attorney. Do not waive your right to an attorney. But he does. And we had a little flashback about how he met Amelia. And he, you know, was talking about, like, yes, they argued sometimes, but like, what couple doesn't? And really, it was all because he, you know, he was performing every night. And so she realized that she could never, like, have him entirely to herself. And
I feel like he's like, music is passion.
Yeah.
It's all the same. Love, fighting.
Yeah. And then he's like, all right, I got to go back to the show. And they're like, okay, that's kind of strange. And so Sarah brings up the good point. She's like, okay, do we have Miles covering for his manager or the manager covering for Miles? Like, that's where they're at the moment. They're like, okay, if one of them did it, the other one has to be like
covering
on it to some degree. So then
I will say, spoiler alert, I had figured this plot line out.
Oh, did you?
About the time they found the thing in the office.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, this is going to turn into this.
Yeah.
This thing. Because it's like, it's too out in the open, too kind of like random. And I was like, it's like, I think the thing that got me was that there were rubber gloves with it.
Yes.
I was like, you wouldn't, if its only purpose of being there was to kill a person, you wouldn't, you know, have these gloves, or you, like, you wouldn't just put it like back in this bag.
No, you would take it.
Which meant like somebody used it, didn't want to get rid of the evidence, didn't care to get rid of the evidence.
Yeah.
And I was like, they were so dodgy. I think maybe it was after this scene. I was like, they're sort of like, oh, doesn't really like, we're not going to, we don't seem to be fervently chasing after all these suspects. I thought, oh, she did it to herself.
Yeah. We'll get there in a little bit. But before we do, we have Jim Brass and Catherine with Mr. Dunbar. And he's trying to say that he did the right thing by leading this double life. He had just gotten married, and then he had an affair, and he got the other woman pregnant, and so he did the right thing.
He got married
to her too. And they're just like, I can't, you could see like their brains are like, I can't make this work.
He's not the brightest bulb in the shed.
He is not. No. And he's explaining that he has the apartment, not because he has like a third, he doesn't have a girlfriend on the side. He just like needs some space to himself sometimes. And it's just like easier to have his own apartment.
He's never alone. Which is also, by the way, like this whole, like, I'm with this family, and the other time that family made me realize, like, I don't think he's actually leaving town, which is why I didn't buy the sales thing.
No.
I was like, so what is he actually doing for a job?
We don't know. We never learn.
I don't think he has one.
I think he has a job.
Maybe he's independently wealthy. We just have to invent plotline because they never explained it to us.
They've never explained it to us.
Or he really is a CIA agent.
But he does explain how the Band-Aid got there, which is essentially his daughter was playing and handed him the Band-Aid, and then he threw it out when he got to the apartment. And then they turn towards the volcanoes, and he admits that he borrowed Beth, one of his wife's pliers, but he never returned them.
Dun, dun, dun.
So then Catherine is back at Beth's house, and there's a little matchy-matchy on some tool marks. So they take her into custody. But before we return to her, we have work with dish gloves, the ones that Nick was just mentioning. They have burns on them. Sarah enters, and she's like, oh, hey, I pulled prints from this piece of slate. They're Amelia's. So
I do think that the burn marks on the gloves, I don't know if this would make, I don't know how this works chemically, like I don't know what's reactive with what, so whether or not holes would be possible. But if the thing you were cleaning your glass with wearing those gloves burned holes in those gloves very easily, I do not imagine you would keep using those gloves, because you would just be burning through them
constantly
all the time. So I thought the burn mark didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. But for them, it prompts them to go down to the morgue, and this is where they confirm their theory. Amelia has 3 acid burns on her hand, and so this is where...
Great job, Doc Robbins, not picking this up during your autopsy.
Normally, he's so on top of this, but evidently not this go-around. And this is where they admit, or they decide, that she wasn't murdered. She, in fact, committed suicide. So we go to Warwick. He is with Miles and Sam, and this is another instance. Miles does not seem super upset about this news. He doesn't seem all that upset that his wife killed herself.
I mean, the fact that he was back on stage like one night later was a good indicator to me that maybe their relationship really wasn't in a great place. And
no, because then he's just like, oh yeah, well, like, show must go on, and then goes out there.
He was planning to kill her for like weeks, and then she kills herself.
He's
saves him the trouble.
He's like, whew, like one less thing I have to worry about. And he's like, yeah, he's just like, oh, well, show must go on, and goes out there and sings Amelia.
While like staring these other girls, like giving them the eyes in the crowd. I thought he was going to invite one on stage and write a song about him. I thought that would have been the best ending of this episode. I need a new muse. Why don't you come up on stage?
Come on up.
And then cut to black.
Yeah. So that's the end of storyline B. We return to storyline A. Catherine and Grissom are with Beth at interrogation. She's known about Debbie, the other wife, for quite some time, but she was okay with that. She accepted that.
Mrs. Dunbar, how long have you known about Roger's double life?
His other wife's name's Debbie. Once or twice a year, he'd call me by that name. I ignored it.
It's very difficult for two people to live a lie, let alone 3.
Look, when Roger and I were together, he was a good husband, a terrific father. It was almost like being in a state of suspended honeymoon.
What she wasn't cool with was when she learned that he had a whole separate family. He was like, she was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's not just another woman. He has another, like, established family.
Which apparently, like, she discovered in, like, the last couple of days.
Yes, in the last couple of days discovered this. And so they're kind of like, well, why didn't you just leave him? And she's like, nope, he made a fool out of me. So essentially I had to enact revenge. And she does admit that she didn't mean to kill the three people she did, in fact, end up killing. She was like, no, that wasn't my goal.
It's not murder. It's just accidental manslaughter.
And this is where she talks about she had set the timer to go off when he was supposed to be driving to the airport.
Yeah, she says 8:30, I think, like in the morning. But that became the whole, like, he's never actually going to the airport because he doesn't actually fly out of town. So I got to this whole, like, thing in my head where I was like, she doesn't actually know what his schedule is like. And so I didn't know if it was supposed to be 8:30 the next morning or if it was supposed to be 8:30 that morning. I just didn't know the answer to the question. Because obviously it wasn't 8:30 in the morning when he returned the car, because it
he returned it at like
nighttime, because 30 nighttime. Minutes later it was blowing up at night.
Yeah.
And so that's why, I mean, like, I just don't really get I just didn't really know which one it was. So the wife doesn't really know what his schedule is, clearly, because he's not really flying out.
Right.
Because he's not really going anywhere. Nope. But she knows he's living a double life, but apparently doesn't know everything. So it was, like, really confusing to me when the bomb was supposed to go off, if it was supposed to have gone off earlier that morning, or if she was under the misassumption that he was flying out the next morning.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, and, that's fair. I didn't really know.
Yeah.
He also has this random apartment that she may or may not know about. So he might disappear for time, like for me time sometimes.
Yep. So they do want to know why she chose a bomb. They're like, okay, like, out of all the methods one could have chosen to eliminate their husband, why a bomb? And she basically is just like, not that much harder to make a bomb than a volcano.
Nope.
So
there's a lot of things you buy at the store or online that could do a lot of damage in the right combination. Just takes a little bit of oxygen.
Yep. And that's the end of the episode. So, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I'm very split on this episode. Okay. Like, there are times while watching the episode I was enjoying myself and liking it. There are times where it's sort of like, meh, this is kind of silly, you know. So I just landed on a 3. I don't know. This about feels as middle of the road as you can be. There's good things. There's bad things.
Yep.
I feel like there's not a lot of great sciencey evidence work in this episode, but then we got people back like Bobby, and, you know, everyone's here today, you know, for at least part of the episode. So yeah, very middle of the road for me. Watch it. I didn't quite give it a rewatch, but it's fine, you know.
Yeah.
this should be the bottom, like, you should be at least this good of an episode to go forward, kind of line, right?
Yeah.
Like, anything worse than this is probably a bad episode. Anything better than this has the potential to be a good episode.
Yeah. I waffled on where to put this. I think I'm going to land... See, I'm still waffling. I'm going to land at a 3 out of 5.
Isn't it crazy that we both are waffling on this episode?
Yeah.
I can't put my finger on why.
That was my problem. I've thought more about the rating of this episode than I've thought about most ratings of my episode, because usually I'm just like, I'm at the end of it and I'm like,
I just know where I'm at.
I know where I'm at.
And it's not like, oh, this storyline was good and this storyline was bad. It was like both storylines were like, there are good parts of this storyline, there are bad parts of the storyline.
The whole team was involved, great. Two storylines, great. Bobby was back, awesome. I apologize because this is going to sound so mean, and I hate sounding, Nick knows that I hate sounding mean or being mean. Well, this could be mean, it could not be mean. But as I watched this episode, both times that I watched it, I was like, is this how they wrote the Mr. Dunbar character to come across as? Or is this actor a really poor actor?
The number of times I thought
I couldn't figure it out. Like, I was like, and so that bothered me. Like, I was like, I think
because, like, it's so milquetoast, like, there's nothing overly great about the episode. There's nothing particularly worse. Like, you struggle to figure out how you feel about it. But then there's also like things like that character where you're just like, is this good acting? Is this bad acting?
I literally couldn't tell. I was like, I don't know what this.
Like what he's this like is. This mastermind dude who stumbled into living two lives, but he's actually really bad at it and deceived nobody. And he both can't put together like a pipe bomb volcano thing, and then just by watching someone do it once can immediately do it the next day.
Yeah.
And then it's so hard to like pin down.
It is. And then I think when it comes to storyline B, I think, and you know, I do think, I don't think the episode, I don't think the story would be told the way that it is told today. Like if you were gonna like take this story, yeah. I don't think. And I think just the idea of this like beautiful woman deciding to end her life instead of just divorcing her husband.
Yeah.
And like
very unfulfilling.
Like take him for his money, girl, yeah, and go find a man that'll spend more time with you. Yeah. Like I mentioned
like a prenup or anything like that. Like any reason why it would have been motive if she had one, right? Or didn't have one.
That's what like divorce him. Take half. Find a man that like wants to spend time with you.
I feel like there are many times in this episode where I feel like we weren't really getting enough information about what was really going on. It was just kind of like, what am I watching?
I feel there was definitely things that should have been answered that weren't answered, like what did Mr. Dunbar actually do for a job? And
I thought Mr. Dunbar,
between Amelia and Miles,
I thought Mr. Dunbar was going to be a spot the guest star. There's so many times
he's not in many things.
No, there's so many times I was like, do I know who this guy is? And then like he's not like anyone.
Sorry,
yeah, no,
Mr.
he's
Dunbar,
the most mediocre character. Sorry. Sorry, mediocre. Billy Keen, if that's Billy your Keen. Real name. Wow. I did look up this guy. He's like a professional boxing fight promoter now. Like he got out of acting and is like.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, his IMDb even says Billy Keen is a professional boxing manager. Manny Pacquiao, big name. Julio Chavez Jr., big name. So. Like he's a real deal in the boxing world. He apparently got it, which is also very Vegas-y.
It is very Vegas-y. That is.
Yeah.
It is. Funny.
That's yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Mediocre episode.
I agree. And I think I gave it a 3 over a 2.5. Like that was my waffling. It was like 2.5 or 3.
Those were exactly that. Is that 2.75? Did we ever done a 0.75?
I think the reason that I decided I'm going to go with 3 is that the rewatch wasn't bad.
Yeah, I felt the same thing. I thought I was going to hate the rewatch.
I thought I was going to hate it too.
We're going to tank it. I was like, fine.
And then I rewatched it and I was like, oh, this is all right. I was like, this isn't.
But I can't recommend rewatching it.
No.
Because it wasn't good. It just wasn't bad.
Yeah, just watch it once. You're good. You're all set. So.
Season 4, episode 9, Grissom versus Lehino. It wasn't good, but it wasn't bad.
But it was bad.
That's my final summary.
That's basically it. So we'll see if we have a similar feel for our next episode.
C minus.
When we return next week to review season 4, episode 10, Coming of Rage.
Ooh, good names of these episodes recently.
Good names of the episodes recently, for sure.
Having no context is also creates this nice
spookiness. We'll see what happens. But otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. We'll